Impact of Influence. Influence.
Covering true crime throughout the Southeast.
Hello, friend. So glad you're going to spend time with us on this Impact of Influence episode. I am Matt Harris. Seton Tucker, where can they find Impact of Influence?
You can find us on Facebook at Impact of Influence.
Right. And the YouTube channel, which slowly but surely getting rolling. We got a lot of subscribers suddenly, so we appreciate that. You can find the easiest way to navigate that is to go to the Impact of Influence Facebook page and then work your way through that, part of the Evergreen Podcast Company. And we'd love it if you'd rate and review and, of course, share the episode. And this whole journey of this podcast began with covering the Murdoch situation and Alec Murdoch and all the things that surrounded that. So we do have a little bit of Murdoch news to start before we go to this other true crime story from the Southeast.
Libby Murdoch died. She was 85. And this is the mother of Alec Murdoch. And that is where he traveled to her house the night of the murders of Maggie and Paul.
And she had been suffering from dementia.
Yes. She was under hospice care.
Right. Long before the murder charges and all that sort of thing occurred.
And I just read an article this morning that Michael DeWitt did in the Greenville News that talks about the legacy of the Murdoch women. It's really interesting. A lot of them were very educated and accomplished in their own right. So just an interesting historical article.
Very good. And we're going to stay in South Carolina for this story, a tragic story of the death of a 26-year-old pregnant woman, Katie Major, and her 10-month-old daughter, River. Just terrible story. It happened in 08, January. She was found dead by a CSX employee near railroad tracks in Monk's Corner, South Carolina. CSX.
Railroad.
Yeah, that goes back to the Murdochs. The CSX built their empire, suing the railroad and CSX claims and all that sort of thing. And it was right near Monk's Corner, South Carolina. And her 10-month-old daughter was found about 50 yards from the track in a nearby pond. Just awful.
Yeah, and there were no footprints found between the mother and the baby. And Katie's original death, and it's Katie, K-A-D-I-E. So if you're confused about the way we're saying it, her death was originally ruled a suicide. And 10-month-old River, Lynn, was ruled a drowning.
So it was really a murder-suicide because they were saying that Katie drowned
well,
the baby.
No, they didn't necessarily know that. They said that maybe there was some confusion that maybe the impact by the train or whatever hit her caused River to be ejected.
Okay.
So it was unclear if the force of trauma could have thrown River.
And she was no injuries on River, right?
No, there were no other injuries other than drowning. So she could have been ejected. It was unclear, and they did not necessarily declare it a murder-suicide. They just said that River died by drowning.
Okay. So, and then there's a lot of questions, a lot of circumstances that are obviously just by that alone, very unusual circumstances. But let's set it up a little bit where Monk's Corner is in South Carolina.
So this is in the Lowcountry of South Carolina. It's in Berkeley County, which abuts Charleston County. And the Cooper River flows through Monk's Corner. And also there's Lake Moultrie. It's a low-lying area. And there's, I guess, they're kind of famous for their cypress gardens.
And Seton, give us a little bit about 26-year-old Katie Major.
Well, Katie married her high school sweetheart, Aaron Major, in 2003. Her death occurred in 2008, and at that time, she was a full-time homemaker raising her 10-month-old daughter, River Lynn, and she was 5 months pregnant, and she had actually, I believe, the day before had found out that she was having a son, which she planned to name Aiden. Now, these children would be 14 months apart, just doing the math, and she clearly would have her hands full with two young children. Now, Aaron, her husband, worked for Katie's father as a house painter. And the family described that she was doing exactly as what she had always hoped to do by being a mother and focusing on her family.
So let's go to the date, January 6th, when this happened in 2008. You could go either way sometimes in the Lowcountry, but this was a cold, stormy night, freezing temperatures, 29 degrees around the time Katie's husband, Aaron, shows up at Vicki Hall, Katie's mother's home. And what does Vicki report?
Aaron shows up around 1:40 a.m. at her home and says that he can't find Katie. And Aaron says that Katie had some sort of premonition that she was going to be killed and she wanted to check into a hotel.
What?
She's very paranoid.
Yeah, it's one thing to have the premonition. It's another thing to think that somehow you'll be safe if you go to a hotel as opposed to in your home with your husband.
That's the first strange point. He says after his wife tells him this and she's acting strangely, he says, I'm going to go take a shower. Aaron and Vicky, Katie's mother, they start driving around the area.
I'm going to back you up for a second because we didn't mention that when he's in the shower, she leaves.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. She leaves. She takes off in her truck. When Aaron shows up at Vicky's house, they start driving around and they're checking hotels and back roads. And Vicky says that he says several strange things during this ride. Aaron did not appear to be looking around for Katie as they're checking these roads and the hotels. Vicky says that Aaron starts saying some strange things. He starts talking about conspiracy theories, the Twin Towers, that the government was responsible, just kind of weird stuff.
Like he's not talking about Katie.
Yeah, where's my missing pregnant wife and child?
He goes into how the government was behind the Twin Towers, and he just doesn't seem focused on finding her.
Vicky also notices something else really strange about Aaron this evening. She notices that his hand is noticeably swollen. And her younger daughter, Sarah, notices the same thing. And Sarah, the younger daughter, had kind of stayed back in case Katie showed up. While waiting for Katie, Sarah, the younger daughter, notices...
It's Katie's younger sister.
Vicky's younger daughter. Yeah. Notices that there's a highlighted Bible passage. And in this passage, it talks about something about the firstborn son being sacrificed.
And they don't know who highlighted it.
No, we don't know who highlighted it.
Which is odd, but like one of the only things?
Or Aaron could have highlighted it. This was something that she stuck out to her while she was waiting.
It was at Katie and Aaron's house.
Yes.
Because that's where she went in case Katie showed up.
Yes.
So at some point, as they're driving around, they separate. Vicky and Aaron go their separate ways.
Yeah, so... Vicky is going to kind of check around North Charleston and the Goose Creek area, and Aaron is going to head kind of towards Columbia. It says he's going to head towards Columbia to check out hotels.
And that would make sense to split up, cover twice as much ground.
Right. Now, around 11:30 a.m., Vicky gets a call from Aaron, and he tells her that he's heard on the radio that two people have been hit by a train on Oakley Road. And that they were deceased.
Hmm.
So when Vicky arrives, she sees Katie's white Chevrolet pickup truck, but there's no sign of a collision.
So he tells her about this wreck that he heard about on the train. So she immediately shoots over there.
Right.
And thinking that maybe it's possible Katie.
Right. And this is actually, there's a 48-hour special that she gives this recollection about what Aaron has told her and then showing up. Aaron has said that he had heard this on a radio, and Vicky checks out and she says, I can never find any radio.
Like a news report or anything like
that. Yeah, no news report of this being reported about this train collision on the radio.
But when she goes there, Katie's truck is there. Are there authorities there?
I assume because this was reported by a CSX employee that there was this collision.
But it wasn't she could find any media reports of it.
No, there were no media reports of it. She did see, according to Aaron's computer, that there was a WCS talk radio computer search. 2 minutes later, he searches for two dead in Berkeley County. He's searching on his computer for these terms.
For two dead. He's searching for that.
Right, two dead and WCS talk radio.
If I'm looking for my wife and kid, I don't think I'm searching for two dead. I might be calling hospitals. I might be doing that, but.
Well, if you'd heard this on the radio, then maybe you would be searching, like, who are these people if your wife is missing? Her keys were not found.
The keys for Katie's truck?
The keys for the truck were not found, but they were, they got a replacement set and the car started right up. So there was no sign of car troubles.
And Katie's body not appear to be struck by a train. Investigators believe Katie was struck by something hanging off the train, and she was wearing a hoodie, jeans, dark-colored jacket. Talk about the injuries.
So she had a deep laceration nearly 2 feet long to her lower abdomen, and she had another laceration on the inside of her thigh. It seems like different locations. It's not my expertise, but it does seem a little bit odd.
And Baby River was wearing a turtleneck and pink overalls. Katie's wedding rings were found in her pocket.
Yes.
Not on her hands.
Not on her hands.
What else was in her pocket?
So there was also a paper, I think it was folded up with some spiritual, like scribblings of spiritual warfare and the Antichrist, just odd information. And inside her pickup was a religious book, and there was $1,000 in cash in different envelopes.
Hmm. The family said the notes were Katie writing down things Aaron was saying. They're the family of Katie. You know, the other side would say, well, this is part of her paranoia. This is part of her, you know, going into these weird behavioral situations. That would be the other side.
Right. Well, because Vicky says that as she's driving around looking for Katie the night of the death, she's saying that Aaron is saying these kind of conspiracy theories. So it's possible that she was writing down some of the things that her husband was saying.
Right, right. It is possible. It's also the devil's advocate that they both were going down some kind of weird, you know, spiral, you know, hole of.
I mean, we've all heard that. Some people believe that the Twin Towers were not taken out by, they were taken out by our government. I mean.
But the religious stuff is what is tying them together, right? Because it's the highlighted thing about the first child. It's the things in her notebook are religious. He mentions the Twin Towers, but what's in Katie's belongings is religious stuff.
Yeah.
So according to Vicky, Aaron's house was not processed and he went home unaccompanied.
Yeah. So the family members also report that the house was kind of in disarray. It was a mess. But 24 hours later, when they go back, the house is cleaned up.
Which, again, you never know how someone's going to react to something, but it seems to the mother of your child and your child are dead. And you go home and clean up the house.
The last thing you would think you would be on your mind was to, hey, let me clean the dishes or pick up whatever
mess, whatever. Unless you're, even if it's trying to make, I mean, you know, people are going to be coming over, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, that seemed like it happened in the Murdoch situation, too. I mean, it reminded me of that the family was allowed to go back to the house and they cleaned up, people cleaned up the dishes and put stuff in the fridge.
But it wasn't Alec cleaning up.
It wasn't Alec cleaning up. No, these were other family members.
So this was the actual husband.
But, you know, you never know what people do when they're in the midst of trauma. I mean, when we talked to a 911 dispatcher a long time ago, she said some people do kind of crazy stuff like that. Yep. Their loved one is dead on the floor, and they're cleaning
going
up.
Going about, rote things that they would normally do.
Right.
Like that one situation where the person was dead, and this guy lay down and fell asleep on the couch or something.
Yes,
and they thought he did it, but it turned out he didn't.
But nonetheless, it's very odd behavior.
Very weird. Let's talk about one of our sponsors. It is Factor. You can eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals.
Every fresh meal is never frozen and is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, and they are ready in just 2 minutes.
Where did you have chili the other day?
Delicious.
And if you want gourmet meals, you can try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, asparagus. So head to factormeals.com/impact50 and use code IMPACT50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box.
That code's IMPACT50 at factormeals.com/impact50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Impact 50 at factormeals.com/impact50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
And they ask you, the law enforcement says, can you make a statement? He says, I'm too emotional to write a statement. So they do it for him.
Right. He can't write the statement out. So someone else is writing him out because he says he's too emotional. But we've already discussed before, Vicky, Katie's mom, and Katie's sister, Sarah, noticed that his hand has an apparent injury. It's swollen in some way.
And in fact, in the police interview, he has, it's not a cast, but it's very well wrapped.
Well, no. Okay. So the story with that is he says that when he went to go pick up the casket for his wife, he punched a cinder block wall.
That's right.
And when he punched this wall, he injured his hand and he had to have, I believe he had to have a surgery. And there was a witness from the funeral home who said that, yes, he did punch this wall. But again, was this an act to try to cover up his pre-existing injury?
That's possible. Let's hear a bit of his interview with law enforcement from 48 Hours.
Sorry, man. It took me so long. Okay. You want anything to drink? Anything before we get started? Listen, I know you've had to tell this story time and time and time again. But I'm going to ask you to tell us what's going on, if you don't mind.
Okay. I'm talking to her in the doorway, and I finally... She felt like I was trying to keep her at the house by talking to her. Because I was trying to get her just to sit down for a minute, you know, and... You know, I said, let me, you know, hear you out. So we're in, I don't know, we might have talked for an hour in that entrance to the house. And River's just playing on the floor and whatnot. And so I finally, I got worried. And she got more and more, like, paranoid about me and started completely not trusting me at all. And that's when I was like, because I wasn't planning on skipping town or, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Really leaving, and she felt like I was trying to keep her there, you know. So that's when I was like, okay, I'm gonna get in the shower, I'm gonna pay my employee real quick, and then I'm gonna go with you and we'll drive around all night or do whatever you want to do, because I knew something was bad wrong, you know, because she's just really shaking, scared, and I didn't know what was going on. So that's when I finally got her to calm down. So she agreed to let me get in the shower, and she said she'd wait on me. So I went upstairs, started, you know, in our bedroom, you know, straight down the hall is River's bedroom, and she was up there. I'm pretty sure she put River in the crib while she, and she said she was going to go make a bottle to get ready to go. So that's the last thing she said to me. And I asked her again, I said, you're going to wait for me, aren't you? And she said, yeah. So she went downstairs and made a bottle, and I got in the shower, and then about halfway through the shower, I heard, I didn't know, I wasn't sure it was her truck cranking up, but I heard something like that, you know, while I was in the shower. So I got out of the shower, looked out the window, and her truck was gone. So I got dressed, got in my truck, tried to find her.
Well, let me ask you this. What do you think happened?
Well, that's why I was asking you about, I don't know what happened.
Well, I mean, it does clear up the shower thing a little bit. Like, it makes sense. She's making a bottle. She says, I'm not, you know, she makes a bottle. It's not like she's trying to storm out. So it's possible that I would, you know, and it sounds like he'd got done work from painting, had to pay an employee, blah, blah, blah. So if she's like, I'm going to make a bottle, it sounds like, she, according to his story, she's calmer.
But she's getting paranoid. He's preventing her from, she thinks he's preventing her from entering the house. I don't know.
And then he says something about, I'm not going to take off and flee. Well, why does she think he's going to, I guess because paranoia, according to him. It's, so he says more in this interview, some of the other things that he says. Because I know he does goes through the postpartum psychosis.
Yeah, he says that she's suffering from postpartum psychosis, postpartum depression. But what's really weird about this is that she had seen her OBGYN just the day before.
Oh, really? Okay, I didn't know it was that soon before, yeah.
Yeah, she had seen, and that's when she found out that she was having a boy.
Oh, that's right.
Yep. And on this 48 Hours episode, they interview the doctor. And the doctor was not actually interviewed by law enforcement, but the doctor says there's no evidence that she was suffering from this at all.
Right. Now, of course, that's one quick meeting with the doctor. It's always possible that someone from depression can show no signs for a portion of the day or an hour or whatever
right,
it is.
But then family members also report that they had spoken to Katie the day of and that nothing seemed out of the ordinary. And in fact, Katie had spoken to Vicky about going to dinner with her. She had wanted, Katie had wanted to go to dinner with her mother, but they didn't meet up because Vicky had already gone to Applebee's and gotten taken out. So, and that
doesn't
was.
Sound like someone.
It doesn't sound like someone in crisis.
Right. Let's go to the funeral. A funeral home employee says that Aaron, as we said a minute ago, punched that cinder block wall while selecting a coffin. And we think, I mean, the theory goes that maybe he was covering up
his
a previous injury.
Right. Originally, they weren't invited to the funeral.
Who
like,
wasn't
that was
invited?
The Vicky and
the mom.
The mom was not invited to the funeral. So that makes me think that maybe there's some bad family dynamics.
Sure.
But also, people usually put those things aside during a funeral. There were a couple of other weird things. Katie and River were buried in the same coffin, but Vicky says that Aaron wanted to display the unborn child, have it cut out and displayed with them.
Oh, good Lord.
I know, which sounds really, really very weird. And again, we don't know what grief does to people, but he was also during the funeral, he was eating McDonald's.
During the service.
During the service. During the funeral services, he was eating McDonald's.
So if anybody's having weird behavior, but then again, maybe because of the grief, but...
I've never seen anyone eat like a fast food at a funeral.
Right, no, no.
Have you?
No, no, no.
Very, very odd.
All his behavior, the rantings about the Twin Towers and the Bible stuff and the wanting to display the unborn child who was not very far along and still have them both buried together. I mean, a lot of weird behavior.
And Vicky, you know, we'll talk a little bit about this later, but Vicky has been very outspoken about her belief that something was not right. But we don't hear a lot from Katie's dad, which I think was, some people just don't want to be in the media or don't want to speak out. But I thought that was a little bit interesting because I did a deep dive and really tried to find her father speaking to the media at all during this time, and he has not.
And I reached out to a private eye that worked this case really hard and who was part of helping this case be eventually reopened.
Right. And I reached out to Katie's mother, but I did see in a lot of the interviews and her own, she has a Facebook page and a blog. I think her daughter does the blog. She kind of has at times had to take a little bit of a break from this and kind of go. So I'm sure if you lose a child, sometimes it just gets overwhelming.
And a grandchild at the same deal.
And she was pregnant. So really it was a terrible, I'm sure, awful situation. And she probably does need to take some breaks.
She had this PI help her because the case was closed for a bit. In 2018, it was reopened with a new sheriff, Dwayne Lewis. He reopened it and called it a death investigation.
But he didn't go as far as calling it a homicide investigation.
No, no. It's 11 years after her death, Berkeley City Sheriff's Department named husband Aaron as the only suspect.
Yes.
And that's 11 years where Vicky was fighting, and the sheriff said that he had got a heads up. He said in his words, Vicky's crazy. She's going to come in here and try to get you. But then he said, but once I heard her, she wasn't crazy. She was a grieving mom who had really great points. And thus, with the help of the PI, et cetera, reopened the case.
Right. And the family also sought for a coroner's inquest, which is we saw in Jaden Phillips' case because, you know, the coroner ruled it as suicide. Hmm. And they wanted this manner of death changed. But the coroner refused this inquest. And he said that there were no new witnesses and that he had reviewed the case with two different solicitors in different jurisdictions, and that there was no evidence that put anybody at the scene.
So, right, like they're saying there's no
footprints,
no clothing, no DNA, no nothing to indicate.
Well, no new witnesses to interview, but Vicky really disagreed with this. I mean, I think one of the people that she would probably have wanted to be interviewed by the coroner would be the OBGYN who saw her the day before. And she said, actually, she was quoted at ABC News 2, they can call everybody back to the stand. They can ask for the husband, the family, all the things that weren't done. All the witnesses can be called, and it would be a public hearing. Because she thinks that law enforcement did not investigate this properly.
And I think even the former sheriff at some point mentions, hey, you can't dig your heels in, even no matter how much later. If they find stuff, they find stuff. So maybe we made mistakes. But without a subpoena, you can't make people talk.
No, and this case has now been turned over to SLED. It's in SLED's hands. I don't know what the status is now. But, you know, it's really sad because the location that Katie was killed is very close to the horse farm that her mother, Vicky, owns. And she can actually hear the trains passing by. Mm. And one thing, there's a makeshift grave, I guess. And one thing I found really disturbing in one of the articles I read was that at this makeshift grave, there was a plastic doll found with a hole gorged out of the stomach.
Like someone left that there.
Someone left it there and...
either to be
cruel
or that was their way of, who knows, a way of paying tribute. Just weird.
Just extremely strange.
And upsetting. I mean, I don't know what kind of person would do that. There are a lot of questions, obviously. It doesn't, but we have the, you know, the similarity of one thing is, you know, Stephen Smith, when you can't, people are some saying not really hit by a train, hit by a train, or hit by a car in that case. Now it's like hit by a train, not hit by a train.
Well, and she had an open casket, so she clearly wasn't standing in front of the train. I mean,
it's something that's sticking out.
They said it was something sticking out, but whether that's the case or not.
Or why she was standing there, right? That's a question. Why is the baby in the lake, river? There's a lot of questions there that I'm glad they reopened it, because it does seem you don't want to close something with so many questions. Right?
Yes.
And I'd like somebody to take a good look at the autopsy. And I'm not accusing the coroner of anything, but is it very clear that that's the cause? And if that's, they don't seem to be debating it a little bit. So is the real question, why was she standing there? If they can say, yes, it looks like she could have been hit for something by the train, but why?
And is a 2-foot-long gash in the abdomen and another deep laceration in her thigh, is that consistent with something hanging off a train?
And again, remember, we've heard from Dr. Dupree and Joseph Morgan about, and one of Dwayne's friends, that coroners take the whole story into effect. It's not just looking at the body. So in other words, they know it's by train tracks. They know she had these injuries. They know there's no signs of anyone else being around. So they draw the conclusion
and
based on the whole story.
And there's allegations of her acting erratically.
Right. So that's the deal there. If you want to chime in, of course, Impact of Influence on Facebook, the YouTube channel, rate, share, comment. I would love to hear from you. And it keeps, a lot of people are sending us cases to work on.
We have a big, long list.
Long list.
Yes, but we
keep
do.
Keep them coming.
Keep them coming.
Some make more sense than others, depending on the situation. So keep those suggestions coming to us through the Facebook page or YouTube channel. And again, we appreciate you and grateful that you're spending time with us. We'll talk soon, friend.
I'm an American vigilante. I have a question for you. What would you do if someone you cared about was abducted, taken from you? Would you call me? Would you care about how I got them back? Download American Vigilante now.
Hello, this is Dr. Grande, the host of True Crime Psychology and Personality. On my podcast, I explore and explain the pathology behind some of the most horrendous crimes and those who commit them. We discuss topics like narcissism, psychopathy, sociopathy, and antisocial personality disorder from a scientifically informed perspective. What is a narcissist? How do you spot a sociopath? What signs can you look for to protect yourself from these dangerous personalities? It's not just about the stories, but also the science and psychology behind them. So if you're interested in true crime or mental health, I'd encourage you to give my show a listen wherever you get podcasts.